baby. Stop. Right on.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Looks like a nice day. Where it's the cool before the hot. I hear Wednesday's going to be hot in Milwaukee because of the debate, but as also we have heat warnings already in place for Wednesday.
Sandy, we've got to talk about the debate on, because I won't see you until Friday on the air, but the debate is Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts about...
The thriller from Manila. Yeah. This is the talkie from Milwaukee.
Let me ask you, Sandy. I'm looking at the numbers, and Ron DeSantis is somewhere around 17-18%. He's the number two guy. Donald Trump doubles or dwarfs him. And these people are going to have this debate, and I'm interested in it. You and I are probably going to watch it together somewhere. But your thoughts about if you were managing one of these people who are in the debate, what would you say to them?
Well, I think it depends, right? Because I think the people who are going to have to run for re-election because they already hold office, Tim Scott, for instance,
he's
probably got to worry about what's going to happen in his next re-election campaign. He's not going to get elected president. I'm sure he believes at this point. So he's doing this for other reasons, and what he doesn't want to do is create a big downside for himself. But if you aren't running for re-election in some political office other than president down the road, and if you aren't running for vice president now to try and curry the favor of Donald Trump so you can be his vice presidential candidate, then you have to attack Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump has got this big lead. Your only path to becoming the presidential candidate is for Donald Trump to lose favor and to not get the nomination. You can't be passive about Donald Trump and have any hope of bridging that gap, okay? So we'll see. We'll be able to watch this debate, and we'll see who's running for vice president and who it is that's afraid about their reelection. Mike Pence, for instance. Mike Pence can't possibly expect that he'll be the vice presidential selection again. He already has heard in his ears the hang Mike Pence chance January 6th, and he and Donald Trump have gotten extremely arm's length, and he's going to end up being a critical witness in this January 6th hearing or trial. So Mike Pence needs to stop being careful about Donald Trump. He needs to take Donald Trump on in terms of attacking his weaknesses without attacking his followers, right? But you can attack Donald Trump with respect to the reasons why he shouldn't be nominated president without necessarily insulting the people who currently back Donald Trump.
But, Sandy, he's only polling at 8%.
Well, president. But if you're in this campaign,
right.
you're in it to do something. You aren't in it to simply make appearances publicly, I hope. So I think that the Chris Christie model is going to have to be adopted by a number of others. Somehow, I think Ramaswamy is running a campaign that suggests that he thinks that extrinsic forces might force Donald Trump out. The law,
right?
The law might decide that Donald Trump is indicted, or maybe this constitutional theory in the 14th Amendment that he's ineligible to be president because of this inclusion in the 14th Amendment post Civil War that if you ever were involved with a rebellion against the country, you are not qualified to be president. Ramaswamy, I think, is running to get that seat. So if Donald Trump gets eliminated by dint of the law, Ramaswamy hopes he gets the nomination. Maybe a couple of other candidates carry that false illusion, but I think the people in the debate who are going to come out the best are the ones who are going to be the breath of fresh air, who say things that are pregnant in everyone's minds. And to me, that's the reason why Chris Christie's, it seems, picking up a little steam. His poll numbers in New Hampshire, for instance, got much better. And that was because of appearances and because they're an early primary. And their complexion isn't that much different than Iowa, for instance. They're both demographically quite white and quite Republican. So, you know, I think the debate's going to involve – it's going to be interesting.
So there's a log jam right there with either 8% or 9% or 7%. And you have to do or say something that separates you, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You can't play it safe now.
Exactly.
And so this is where you're going to have to either, you know, urinate or get off the pot, you know, right?
Yes.
You got to do something. Otherwise, why have you been running around the country and taking this time and raising money? This might be your one shot, right?
Well, plus the fact, if you're Donald Trump is in many ways an incumbent, right? So
right.
Typically incumbents don't face much opposition in primaries vis-a-vis like Joe Biden. Joe Biden doesn't
right.
have any realistic opposition, well, Robert Kennedy, but that seems to be an unusual situation. And so if you're going to run in the primary now, you're running against an incumbent. Presumably that's why you're running, because you think that incumbent, that past incumbent, shouldn't get reelected.
You know, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Are you going to watch the debates? Because I've heard people say, well, why would I want to watch the debate? And I'm saying, well, listen, man, number one, are you more inclined to watch it without Donald Trump being there than you would be if he was there, Sandy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I suspect some people who are saying they aren't going to watch it if they're Republicans, it's because their mind is made up. And if their mind is made up, it's probably in the favor of Donald Trump. And so if Donald Trump isn't appearing, they probably aren't interested. You know, we've gotten so used to dealing with echo chambers in our lives that people prefer not to watch the things that disagree with them, that give them cause their peptic ulcer to act up, you know, kind of thing. So I suspect that to the extent Republicans aren't watching it, it'll be the people who've already decided, which if the audience is really small and it suggests that many Republicans didn't watch it, then I think that will be another affirmative proof that Donald Trump does have the nomination locked up.
I also think one of the reasons why Donald Trump didn't show up is Britt Baer is not a guy who is going to automatically kind of bow down to Donald Trump.
Right.
Britt Baer is a guy who is going to ask the tough question, right?
Yeah, he already has.
Yeah, and so Donald Trump doesn't like Britt Baer, even though before it was a different story. Britt Baer is a fair journalist. Is it safe to say that?
Well, he seems to be. You know, I'm in a world in which journalism has become more or less a process of rewriting press releases, some people seem to do a better job than others of asking at least the difficult question that is something that is logically asked as a result of a press release or of a statement or of a position.
You know, again, I don't understand why anybody who's, because there's about, what, two or three mayors and governors who are, you know, in the mix, and or mayors. And so you just wonder, are they auditioning for another time or, you know?
Well, that's the point. If what they're auditioning for is running for another office, you know, what they're doing is running for president, but what they're really doing is building a resume so they can run for
U.S. Senate or some such thing.
Those people, I think, are going to be careful about offending Donald Trump because they don't have an expectation of getting the nomination anyway. They're doing it to build their resume, number one. And number two, there's probably downside in their mind about offending a group of people who seem to have strong feelings about someone, i.e. Donald Trump.
So you could understand, because you're a politically savvy guy, you could understand why Donald Trump would not even go.
Yeah, I think I said last week, I thought his advisor would be telling him not to go. I thought that he was like a moth to a flame and he would have difficulty resisting the histrionic opportunity to appear before all these people. Apparently, his advisors prevailed. I suspect also maybe his lawyers didn't want him to go for fear that he would say things in the debate that might impugn him.
Yeah, with all the things that he's up against.
Yes.
You know, Iowa and the Iowa caucuses and your thoughts in 23, Sandy, are they as important as they once were?
I have trouble understanding the caucus process. It's all about party organization. It's about whipping up party support in a way that isn't quite the same as going to the polls and voting. It's different. It's showing up. It's party activists, people who go to meetings and participate in meetings. Those people in most states are quite ardent politically. The more passive political folks wouldn't participate in something like the caucus process. So I've always thought the caucus process was possibly skewed in the direction of the people who are ardent Republicans and what they think. And so I don't know what that means in terms of their capacity to nominate someone who will actually win the state of Iowa. Except that Iowa is such a Republican-leaning state that, they have a pretty strong sway. But whether the nation should be looking at what they think, I would urge that what Iowa thinks is not representative of the nation. It might be representative of the Republican Party or the Midwest Republican Party, but not the nation.
All right. I got to go to a break, Tom. We'll get you on the other side. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That's Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripes Cast is just the butter on my cheese.
Cockroaches, not that bad. They call them palmetto bugs in South Carolina. Same thing, you can call them up here.
Are they really palmetto bugs?
And they're a great source of protein. They're going to be the lobsters of the future.
They also got salmonella, and they can lay like 40 eggs at once.
Well, they gotta work out a few kinks there, okay? They gotta work out a few kinks.
Cripes Cast, every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. An excessive heat watch begins at 11 a.m. Wednesday and continues until 8 p.m. Thursday night. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 81. Northeast wind.
The sun is rising, most definitely.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789 or text us at that same number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. And Tom from L.A., good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. We do need to get money out of politics. That's the number one thing.
Are you going to watch the debate?
I probably will. I might watch it, but I think a great line would be Donald Trump should have never been on The Apprentice TV show. He should have been on The Biggest Loser because he is the biggest loser with 19 and, you know, with four different indictments. And that's the route I would take. Make it a funny little thing, but I'd say, you know, he should have been on The Biggest Loser because he is the biggest loser.
Tell him to release.
Daryl?
No. Yeah. Go ahead.
No. Did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think someone should say, you know, he should have been on the TV show The Biggest Loser. Make it kind of a comical thing, but entertaining, and go right at him.
Okay, man. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, it's it clearly is. It's the first leg, right?
Yeah, this is like the, you're right. This is a relay race with probably more than four baton passes. And so I think, you know, the press always plays up everything that's current news and the huge lead by Donald Trump. I'm confident that the lead that Donald Trump has will get eroded. I mean, it won't get eroded maybe all the way down to Donald Trump loses.
Right.
But I'm confident that it will change and the numbers will change. And the question is, who surfaces in that? I continue to put some of my bets on someone like Christie, only because he seems to be the one, smart, two, very articulate, and three,
been there before,
willing to be head on about this, and seems to say things that are in many people's minds, but they're unwilling to say.
So let me ask you, Sandy, if out of that group, somebody has to emerge. You don't see DeSantis. What do you think his shortcomings are?
You know, I don't know. I'm not a Republican. I
know, but
I could list a lot of shortcomings from my perspective.
Right.
But I'm not a Republican voter in all likelihood, right. And I'm certainly not a conservative, social conservative Republican voter. DeSantis seems to be putting all of his bets on social conservatism.
Yeah, cultural.
And cultural, this war against woke. I think lots of people will talk about woke and be kind of agitated about it. I'm not sure many people want to vote for a president who makes that their primary platform, even though I think he struck a chord that might even cross party lines in terms of the extent to which political correctness seems to have gone overboard.
You know, Sandy, it is, and you know, as a, well, what would I call myself? A political junkie? Because because I watch these things, and I'm going to be watching this clearly to look at the people who are. And just because they're running doesn't mean that these are leaders in the conservative movement, right? I mean, they're running; anybody can run, but it doesn't mean that these are the eventual heir apparents to Donald Trump. You know, whether or not Donald Trump wins or loses, this is his last rodeo. And where does the Republican Party go after that? And that's kind of what my interest is. To see if there's somebody who will eventually fill that chasm.
Well, I think that the issue right now is that there isn't really a Republican Party. Donald Trump has sort of shanghaied the party so that Trump's vision of things and his political positions, which are very hard to predict, actually, have trumped the notion that there is a party with platforms that stand for a bunch of things that ultimately get implemented. I think the main thing that Donald Trump followed through on was judicial appointments. And that was a promise that was made to, I think, the religious right, primarily associated with abortion. And obviously, he delivered on that. And that seems to have kindled a great deal of loyalty to him from an unusual space in our society, which is the evangelicals.
You know, you for a long time, Sandy, have been talking about the two-party problem in this country, and that there should be an additional party. Several years back, I remember you talking about that. Well, there's something that they're talking about, a no-name something or other.
Yeah, we're talking about a centrist party.
Right.
And, you know, the view of the only thing there is that Ross Perot at one point kind of upset an election through his participation with taking quite a few votes in a third party kind of a trend. And
what goes up must come down. Spinning wheel got to go round. Talking about your troubles, it's a crying sin. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel spin. You got no money and you got no home. Spinning wheel all alone. Talking about your troubles and you never learn. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel turn.
That'll wake you up on a Monday morning. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday morning with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we're talking about the debate. And our good friend Jack from Merrimack is on the line. Hey, good morning to you, Jack. Your thoughts?
Good morning. Yeah, my first thought is that Trump can easily afford to stay away from the debate. There are, in my opinion, essentially two types of Republicans. They're the ones who will blindly vote for Trump no matter what happens. No matter if he's convicted of all, 91 counts now, something like that, they'd still vote to put him in the presidency. Then there are the other type of Republicans who will vote for anyone else. Doesn't make any difference, but there is a field of Republican candidates at this so-called debate is very large, and that vote is going to be divided. So essentially, I think Trump has a pretty good lock on the nomination. Second thing I'm going to say is this, though. Even if he doesn't, there's really, from what I've seen, only one Republican candidate that has had enough fortitude to seriously criticize and actually attack Trump, and that's been Christie. And I don't think he's a viable candidate under any circumstances. He's just not that strong and attractive a political figure. Finally, no matter who gets that nomination, not one single one of those, I don't think even Christie has done this, not one single one of those has repudiated or criticized or even mentioned to my knowledge the attempted political coup that took place on January 6th. Now, that's starting to be investigated at the state level by several state attorneys general. So there are some indictments there. But nobody's criticizing those guys because they're all upper-level Republican operatives in the various states. One of them in Wisconsin, I believe, was the chair of the Republican Party. Of course, there's Spindell, who is on the elections board. Excuse me? How could you, if you're a Republican and you saw somebody taking part in an attempted coup against your government, how could you appoint someone to the elections board?
Jack, just to clarify, Jack, by the election coup or political coup, you're talking about the false elector slates in the various states?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and nobody, you know, that, if you'll pardon the bad pun, that's the elephant in the room. And believe me, if we let that elephant back in the room again, we are not going to have this country. This country will be under an authoritarian government. And, you know, of course, I'm an old guy, But my guess is that if we let the Republicans take over our government again like we did in 2016, in my lifetime, I will never see another truly Democratic election in this country. I mean, this is, people have to deal with this, and no, not one Republican is dealing with it. And that's, I can't understand how anyone could trust a Republican that doesn't even mention this thing, much less criticize it and say, this was wrong, because it was wrong.
Hey, Jack, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to touch on
that? Well, I think Jack Smith's investigation is beginning to reach out into the false elector process, and it clearly was in the nature of a national conspiracy. It was a coloring book approach that was utilized in a number of states, and it was developed at a national level, and it was designed within the Trump sympathizer group in the Republican Party to set up a mechanism for basically toppling the election results. You know, it was, the ruse was that these electors were being set up as electors in the circumstance in which a court would rule that the other electors, the validly elected electors, were invalid, voided by court, in which case these people would step forward. But that was a ruse, and even in the documentary level at the top where they were organizing the strategy, it was recognized as a ruse.
Let's go to CJ. Good morning, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. What a great bumper song.
Yeah.
You know, you should be a DJ, Earl. Because I catch myself jamming all the time in between your calls. I'm voting Republican. And why would we want to go back to 2016? Because we were more prosperous and more safe. Gas was $2 a gallon. We're far from that now. And this president promises.
Let me ask you your thoughts on the debate and the people who are, you know, in the debate, and your thoughts on those people, man.
Okay, we got a lot of great candidates up there. I'd vote for any one of them. And I think I'm going to go Republican no matter who it is.
I know, whether it's Trump, or
one of the other great candidates.
So let me ask you, because if it wasn't Trump, sure, and you had that whole other group, which one of them would you support, and why?
Oh, I'm supporting a lot of them, actually.
Yeah, no, you can only support one.
Tim
which
Scott,
one?
Love Tim Scott.
I know, but
I think he's going to be. I think he's going to be Trump's nominee for vice president. He's going to be a fabulous vice president.
So is out of all of those people running, and you could only pick just one, which one would it be and why?
I don't know. I think a lot is riding on these debates, Earl. It's not, you know, at least we're having debates. Your guy won't even debate. He won't come out of his basement again without a teleprompter.
Well, is your guy debating?
You know, you guys always focus on the Republicans.
Is your
Why
guy
don't you
debating?
Focus on your
CJ,
candidate?
Is your guy debating? No. So how can you then talk about, you know, Joe Biden, man? And he's the president. Donald Trump refuses to debate. Why don't you say something about that?
Well, I think that's okay.
It's okay that he doesn't want to debate, CJ, but it's not okay.
Not this one, Earl, because he doesn't have to. And, you know,
and
he's
Joe Biden
be attacked
does
by Chris Christie, and all of a sudden Chris Christie has cred with you guys now.
Well, he doesn't just have cred with us.
The current president's performance, he sucks as president.
Okay, so
the worst president.
So CJ, so Chris Christie just doesn't have cred with Sandy and I. Sandy?
Well, cred. I think I only stated a fact that Chris Christie is the person who has been very direct in his criticism of Donald Trump. I don't think anyone can deny that. I don't think anyone can deny that he did go up in the polls in New Hampshire. I think that's all we've said. Is that cred? I don't know. It just suggests to me that he might be a person that could walk away from the debates with an improved situation politically. That's all just factual discussion and surmise. I don't know if that means cred. That's just a question of analyzing the situation.
Well, let's go to Bill from O'Connell Law. Good morning to you, Bill. You say what?
Yeah, Earl, you and Sandy are doing something really awesome. I noticed in CJ's tone of voice, he's less aggressive. He's more relaxed. He gets to the point what he wants to say. I think you're not changing him. He's still going to vote for what I call domestic terrorism, because that's, if you vote for the Republicans and they all supported it, you vote for domestic terrorism, which means, what is the implication? It means if you don't like the way the vote goes, you just try and overthrow the government. You try and bring in fake electors. You support Ron Johnson, because you either are or you're not. There's no in-between when it comes to domestic terrorism. There is no in-between when it comes to stealing votes. There is no in-between. It's illegal. It's criminal. And if they want to keep supporting that kind of, if that's what their idea of democracy is, well, yeah, we do have a debate now. We really have a debate, because my idea of democracy is honesty, integrity, diplomacy, and respect. If you can't bring that to the table, don't debate. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to David from Mequon. All right, David, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Sandy and Earl. I'm going to, you know, try to listen to the debates. I have not made up my mind as to who I would vote for at this point. I think it's important to hear everybody with their ideas. There's a lot of people I'm not too familiar with their positions. I think, you know, I do think it's a mistake that, you know, that I know Trump is not going to be debating. I think that is a mistake, because you know, at the end of the day, we should always hear from everybody. And I also would point out that, you know, I think it's healthy just to listen to what people's ideas are. What is their policy positions? And like I said, I don't know where they all fall in as far as their policy positions. So I'm interested, and I'm going to wait and see what it's all about before I actually make a final decision here, which I think a lot of people should, just because that does have a huge impact. Whoever does become president will have, you know, a tremendous amount of power and ability to shape things, you know, maybe the way.
So, Dave, let me ask you this. You know, Sandy.
Yeah.
Sandy mentioned that the Republican Party, as it was, is no longer that.
Yep.
Your thoughts?
It has changed. There's no question. You know, the Republican Party was always known as a very elitist party. You know, kind of like the country club party. And it certainly is not that at all today. It's definitely more blue collar, small town, you know, farmers, small business owners, that used to be primarily Democratic. And it's like it's kind of gone full 180 in that respect. So I do agree with Sandy that, yes, the Republican Party today is definitely a lot different than what it was, you know, as I was growing up.
All right, Dave, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy,
sure.
That divide, and, you know, not just the Lincoln Party Republicans, but there are other, just like there is in the Democratic Party, there are these different, you know, compartments.
Well, I think that some of the blue collar rural aspect of it is the rural versus urban, which has some undertones to it that are a bit concerning in terms of what's happened
right.
societally and what's happened to the Republican Party. I would say that, and maybe we're going to go to a break soon, but I was going to tee up a notion, which is that I think one of the problems we've got in the country is that we've got a bunch of people who've decided that they should be able to decide which are good laws and those that ought to be enforced, and which are the bad laws and which are essentially trying to destroy America. And so, you know, for instance...
So, Sandy, hold that thought, because, we don't want to get started and then go to break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, you were saying.
Well, yeah, I was saying that, you know, one thing that I think is sort of a theme that's developed nationally that is very troublesome is the concept that there are that people ought to be able to decide which laws they are good laws and should be conformed to, and which are bad laws and which need to be ignored. And, you know, in many respects, the Trump attack on the election as being stolen is a very barely masqueraded effort to do just that. Because what he's really saying is that a bunch of rules and laws were changed about the voting. And those changes in the rules and the laws caused a lot more people to vote than he would have expected to vote. And the outcome of the election was seriously affected, in his mind, by this change in the laws, and that therefore the election was stolen from him. But it was really stolen from him because of these changes in rules and laws. And he's gone to court, you know, umpty times to try and attack this as being somehow stolen. They say, no. This election was run according to the rules and the laws. Even with that answer from the courts, he continues to beat the drum, and people who follow him continue to beat the drum, that the election was stolen. Stolen because the new laws and the new rules caused a different outcome in the election than they would have expected. I would assert that the AR-15, the 20 million AR-15s held in private hands, are held primarily because the rationale in people's mind is they need these guns to defend themselves against the government when the government comes at them to enforce bad laws, okay? That's an act of sedition, in fact. But these guns are being held for the purpose of protecting in that kind of a circumstance. And we've got lots of people of a mind now that bad laws needn't be followed. And that it's good laws that need to be followed, and it's up to each person to kind of make that decision, good or bad, which incidentally defines lawlessness, okay? I mean, if we have bad laws, we ought to revisit them legislatively and change them, or revisit them in the courts and change them. But as long as we've got laws on the books, if we are a country operating under the rule of law, we need to abide by those laws. And what's interesting, you pointed out off the air, is that many of the people who are basically asserting that the election is stolen, or are asserting implicitly at least that bad laws needn't be abided by, are the same people that talk about law and order and want to have rigorous enforcement of the law in the setting, for instance, of urban crime.
You know, Sandy, you aren't the first one who talked about where we are with this. And And it is frightening, because the people who are willing to go all the way with this view,
yeah,
they're willing to give up everything. Well, I don't care.
Well,
what
January 6th was clearly an episode of that. Okay, and people can say, well, these people got carried away. Yeah, they got carried away trying to impede the imposition of the law as it was, and they wanted to take the law into their own hands. Okay, so is that getting carried away? Well, that's really a manifestation of this notion of lawlessness, that people can pick and choose laws, and if the law is bad, you can attack it, you can disobey it, you can basically operate in a manner that is contrary to it.
But the government can't minimize that. And I think that's probably where we are stuck right now. The government has to see that as a major threat to the government. And it doesn't matter whether it was Donald Trump or whoever it was. And they're trying to deal with that right now.
Well, you understand that this notion of a deep state is itself an attack on the imposition by the government of its laws. Because the notion is that the people who are running the government are these deep state bureaucrats who are running it outside the purview of the public and are running it for their own purposes. And therefore, when that deep state government tries to do something, it's perfectly okay to disobey it because it's being done by the deep state. So people need to understand that this playbook has been used before. The deep state playbook has been used before. It's a way to install authoritarian government in place of something that is manifestly supposed to be a democratic government. And the attack, it's interesting, people install authoritarian governments, which are sort of the ultimate all-powered government. They install them to take the place of these other governments that are run by bureaucrats in the context of democratic governments. And that's been the basis for revolution and coups since 450 years.
So, Sandy, we thought that those things could never happen inside of our nation. And so now that our nation sees the possibility of that, it has to prepare for that. Is it safe to say that?
Well, we do, and we need to react to it. But you understand that if people really buy into the deep state concept, the more the government does to oppose it, the more the manifestly
pushback.
Deep
right.
The state seems to be, so we can attack the FBI, we can attack the CIA, we can attack police, the Justice Department, we can attack the antitrust enforcement, we can attack the OSHA enforcement, we can attack all of these elements that are the government getting in the way of people doing what they might otherwise want to do because of the notion that it is the government itself that is the problem.
So you and I don't always agree with the government, and we constantly talk about it, but the answer is not the way they're going about it. That's not the answer to it.
No, I mean, we're talking, when I'm talking, I'm trying to talk to people who say, exercise your vote, let's change this stuff.
Right.
Let's go to the Congress and change it. Let's change the way we implement our laws, okay? But not, let's just defy, let's not overturn the government, okay?
Yeah. Because that'll never end well.
Never end well.
Yeah.
And it won't end with, when people are thinking about attacking the FBI, the CIA, the OSHA, they ought to think to themselves, what are we going to replace this with? And is it going to be an authoritarian secret service? Because I guarantee you, nobody likes living in a country that's run that way.
I wish we had more time, Sandy, man. But we got to go. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.